Blog Talk Radio.
Hours a week. Interns aren't paid.
and they don't receive housing or commuting assistance. So explain to me what the hell good that is. The White House's 147 interns will have saved the administration roughly $500,000 this summer alone. Summer internship programs run for 11 weeks. Unpaid internships are fairly common in Washington. It's estimated that the federal government uses up to 30,000 unpaid interns every summer. You remember the guy that was molesting those guys?
Yeah.
Unpaid internships are fairly common. Even though some might find it distasteful for the White House to be relying on free labor, not everyone finds the practice problematic. And there's a quote here. It says, as an intern with the government, you're going to be able to get your hands on a lot of high-profile issues and a lot more substantive work than you'd be doing in a private sector, an executive branch intern said. And the networking opportunities, especially with the federal government and being in Washington, where there's such a concentration of federal agencies, is invaluable from my perspective. And the access might be worth more than money. And he quotes, again, in an ideal world, everyone would be paid, but if you're in a position to do an unpaid internship, you do it, he said. If it came down through the courts or whatever that the government had to start paying interns, you'd see a severe reduction in the number of internships available. Well, maybe there would be no internships available in some agencies. And I think that would be a very really negative impact on sort of generating the next cadre of government leaders. And so it is, it has to be that interns don't get paid, and so be it. Okay, well, you're a moron. We don't care. Right, Lila?
Uh-huh.
I mean, the moron is a moron. It's a moron. Okay, so this is an interesting one that I found, too. The post here that it says, Eric Holder says, refuses to investigate Obama's actions in Benghazi.
No kidding.
Obama's sending guns to the Muslim Brotherhood. Solyndra, which is the bankrupt solar corporation that he gave $500 million to.
And to his buddy.
Fast and Furious, which Holder gave, thousands of guns to the Mexican cartel.
Uh-huh.
And the IRS. But he promises to take care of George Zimmerman personally.
Yeah.
What a freaking jerk. Obama's got the jerkiest people in the world working for him. Which I understand.
Well, Eric Holder's a crook just like Obama.
He's the jerkiest guy alive. Now, here's another thing that came up today, and it really surprised the hell out of me. Turns out that what's-his-face, the former Republican, what's his name? What the hell is his name? I forgot
Romney?
His name. Or, yeah, Romney, thanks. Jesus, how fast you forget. Romney's old company, Bain Capital.
Oh, yeah.
Winds up buying up the entire majority of Britain's blood supply. Yeah, it's called vampire capitalism.
Mitt Romney's private equity company, Bain Capital, is in the news again, this time for buying the majority of the United Kingdom's entire plasma blood supply. The Department of Health has sold the state-owned plasma resources to Bain Capital for £230 million.
Can you imagine doing something like that? I mean,
the deal is raising concerns about the seemingly limitless opportunities for privatization. PRUK has been dedicated to using low contamination risk populations, and critics fear the privatization of blood plasma could profit incentivized shortcuts in the contamination of the blood supply. A good worry, Bain Capital and Romney. I'd be worried too.
Yeah.
Former Health Minister Lord Owen wrote to Prime Minister David Cameron earlier this year and urged him to stop the sale. The world plasma supply line has been in the past contaminated, and I fear it will almost certainly continue to be contaminated, Owen wrote. Is there no limit to what and how this coalition government will privatize?
It's really sick. It's really just outright sick. And that's the the jerks in the UK. I mean, we're doing the same thing. I thought this was interesting. This is from the Free Pussy Riot. This is from Joan Baez, actually, for her site, which I'm linked to on Facebook here. But the Pussy Riot is the one that is the Russian group that got arrested for protesting in more than 100 international...
In Russia.
Yeah.
In Russia.
More than 100 internationally renowned musicians have joined a worldwide call for the release of the two jail members of the Russian feminist punk group Pussy Riot, all ahead of their parole appeal hearing this week, by signing an open letter calling for their release. And Amnesty International's open letter... Dear Masha and Nadia, as the one-year anniversary of your trial approaches, we are writing to assure you that around the world, people are both still thinking of you and working for your release. Although you were the most visible of the protesters, we know that there were many other young people who have suffered in the protests, about whom we are also very concerned. But in many ways, through your imprisonment, you have come to represent them.
Many artists voiced their concern when these charges were first brought against you. We had every hope that the authorities in dealing with you would show some understanding, a sense of proportion, even some of the wonderful Russian sense of humor, but none of the above was forthcoming. The impact of your shocking, unjust trial and imprisonment has spread far and wide, especially among your fellow artists, musicians, and citizens around the world, including the many parents who feel your anguish at being separated from your children. While understanding the sensitivities of protesting a place of worship, we ask that Russian authorities review these harsh sentences so that you may return to your children, your families, and your lives. The right to freedom of expression and dissent is a legitimate one and essential in any kind of democracy. You have been accused of what could be described as a victimless crime, but in our opinion, in a just society, there can be no crime where there is no identifiable victim. Your strength, bravery, and fearlessness are an inspiration to all of us. Yours in solidarity, and it's signed by...
About 100 famous people.
Yeah.
Musicians.
Or a lot of people I've never heard of, too.
Bryan Adams, Adele...
Graham Nash.
Animal Collective.
Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah.
Liam Payne. Peaches. Sure. Joe Perry. Phoenix.
Bunny Ray. Scissors. Paul Simon.
You too.
Yeah, just a ton of people. So, anyway, so just so you know, that's what we're doing. That's what's happening there. So, there's been a lot of support for this group.
And I have an article from Waking Times. It'll stop. It'll get too hot if you close that. From the Waking Times. He'll stop. USGS study connects earthquake risk to fracking wastewater injection. It's a horrible thing, that fracking. How they can do that is crazy.
You gotta close this. He's not
gonna
stop.
He will.
This is our dog we're fighting about. Our dog has a loud mouth, and Lila likes it.
No, I just thought it's too hot when we close the door.
If you hear it, blame it on her.
Blame me. A new study out in Science by the U.S. Geological Survey scientist William Ellsworth links earthquakes to wastewater injection sites. These earthquakes, thought to be caused by pressure changes due to excess fluid injected deep below the surface, are being dubbed man-made earthquakes. It's not the first time scientists have used that moniker, as earthquakes have been associated with other industrial operations that mess with the underground formations, such as surface and underground mining or dams that impound water into reservoirs. Yet in more recent years, we're seeing more and more of them. The number of earthquakes has increased dramatically over the past few years within the central and eastern United States, More than 300 earthquakes above a magnitude of 3.0 occurred in the 3 years from 2010 to 2012, compared with an average of 21 events per year observed from 1967 to 2000. How about that? Many likely know that wastewater is a byproduct of many fossil fuel processes. It can come from raw material itself, or is left over from purification steps during the extraction and process phases of fuel production. To illustrate a few examples, during coal processing, some coal gets washed in order to remove materials and other impurities. Many companies dub this under the misnomer clean coal because it's clean before it's combusted, leaving the combustion process with less pollution. But the companies that tote clean coal conveniently leave out the wash water, affectionately named coal slurry, which contains lots of toxic leftovers. Tar sands extraction, likewise, uses massive amounts of water to help separate the bitumen from the sand. And in gas fracking, water used in the wells to frack the rocks and extract the gas must also be properly disposed of. Fracking wastewater was found to be the culprit of the earthquakes in Youngstown, Ohio, where an injection site was near a fault line. Companies take this toxic water and inject it deep into the ground to avoid contaminating the water table. However, the new USGS study found that the risk of earthquake is not actively assessed at injection sites nor monitored. And if wastewater is injected near fault lines, the risk becomes much higher. This article is kind of long, so...
No, just give it up. Yeah.
But it's something to be concerned about. I mean, that's what they're finding out.
Yeah, no question about that. But I wanted to... there was a couple of major
articles. So say no to fracking.
Yeah. There's a couple of major articles I wanted to read tonight, too. It's getting there. I'm getting there. Obama's escalating war on freedom of the press. This is really frightening, what's happening here. And, you know, he's going after the journalists. And, I mean, you barely got any freedom of the press as it is. But now he really wants, this guy is such a dictator. He's such a criminal son of a bitch. And the fact that this guy is still president and isn't being impeached, tells you what a bunch of laid down nothings we have in Congress. And the people in the United States are just laid back, let them take over.
Gary.
Obama's escalating war on freedom of the press. The part of the First Amendment that prohibits abridging the freedom of the press is now up against the wall as Obama's administration continues to assault the kind of journalism that can expose government secrets. Last Friday, the administration got what it wanted, an ice-cold chilling effect from the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, which ruled on the case of New York Times reporter James Rising. The court delivered a blow to investigative journalism in America by ruling that reporters have no First Amendment protection that would safeguard the confidentiality of their sources in the event of a criminal trial, the Guardian reported. The executive branch fought for that ruling and is now celebrating. We agree with the decision, said a Justice Department spokesman. We are examining the next step in prosecution of this case, the Rising case, that potentially made many others, are now under the ominous shadow of the appeals court pronouncement. There is no First Amendment testimonial privilege, absolute or qualified, that protects the reporter from being compelled to testify in criminal proceedings. At the Freedom of the Press Foundation, co-founder Trevor Tim calls the court ruling the most significant reporter's privilege decisions in the decades and asserts that a court eviscerated that privilege. He's not exaggerating. Press freedom is at stake. Journalists who can be compelled to violate the confidentiality of their sources or otherwise go to prison are reduced to doing little more than providing stenographic services and pass along the official story. That's what the White House wants. The Federal Fourth Circuit covers the geographical area where most of the U.S. government intelligence, surveillance, and top-level military agencies, including the NSA and CIA, are headquartered. The ruling pretty much guts national security journalism and the state in which it matters. That court decision came 7 days after the Justice Department released its news media policies report announcing significant revisions to the department's policies regarding investigation that involved members of the news media. The report offered assurances that the members of the news media will not be subject to prosecution based solely on news gathering activities. Hey, thanks. But the document quickly added that the government will take such actions as a last resort when seeking information that is essential to a successful investigation or prosecution. Translation is, we won't prosecute journalists for doing their jobs unless they really want to. And over the weekend, some news accounts described Friday's court decision as bad timing for Attorney General Eric Holder, who has scrambled in recent weeks to soothe anger at the Justice Department's surveillance of journalists. The rulings have awkwardly timed for the Obama administration. And the New York Times reported, but the ruling wasn't just awkwardly timed, it was revealing, and it uncovered just how hostile the Obama White House has become toward freedom of the press. News broke in May that the Justice Department had seized records of calls on more than 20 phone lines used by Associated Press reporters over a two-month period, and have also done intensive surveillance of a Fox News reporter that included obtaining phone records and reading his emails. Since then, the Obama administration tried to defuse the explosive reaction without actually retreating from its offensive against press freedom. This is kind of a longer article. There's a couple of four more paragraphs. But all it states is that Obama is a son of a bitch. You know, let's face it. He's a son of a bitch that needs to get knocked out of office. I mean, he's just a dictator. And he's done more, and I never thought anybody could do more than Bush.
I didn't either.
I didn't think anybody could destroy our Constitution and our government more than George Bush.
But this guy
has completely demolished it. And, you know, I hope that they demolish him. But you know what? There are too many assholes in Congress, too many of them. You know what Pelosi said today? And I posted it. I'm going to read it tonight. She says the Constitution calls for strict gun control. What a freaking moronic move.
Where did she make that up from? Where did she pull that out of the air?
Do you have the
audio piece from Cornel West?
Yeah, I do, but that's pretty long.
Maybe we should just play a little piece of it.
Because the way
a lot of these articles are presented, you would think that black people are in total support of Obama, and it's not true.
No, they aren't.
Absolutely not. And the media, the mainstream media, keeps that from the American public.
Yeah.
Black people are not supportive of Obama. Their lives are not better because he's in office. And as a matter of fact, their lives are worse.
Mainstream media has provided little or no coverage of the Bradley Manning trial, and that is because this trial is about responsibility and obligation to the truth. And the mainstream media wants nothing to do with the truth. Boy, is that true.
And who is that person?
I was just stated. It was just a protest sign. But. And there's, before we get to that, there's one more that I wanted to read, and then we'll play the Obama thing. But something came up yesterday. I know I posted.
I have a little something on the Muslim Brotherhood, which people might be interested in.
I know, but I could have sworn I posted it. So hang on, folks. This one. Yeah, Nancy Pelosi, Congress must uphold Constitution by passing gun control.
What did she do? Pull that out of the air because that's what she wants?
She's a moron. Yeah, she always was, she always will be. I mean, it's just a sick thing that she ever was anything. She's even up in Congress. In Congress, this is a quote from her. In Congress, there can be no more fitting memorial in the lives of...
Close, right there where the X
is. It pop up, sir.
Congress, there can be no more fitting memorial to the lives lost in Aurora, in Newtown and across the country than... Can you make that quote?
I'm trying. This damn site has got more goddamn pop-ups than...
Well, it's because they don't want people to see it, I guess.
It's just, advertising, but they got more pop-ups than anything in the world. Gee, fuck, what?
To the next page, just bottom right.
That's why I don't do this with my site. It just distorts everything.
She really wants gun control.
Yeah. Newtown and across the country, then a concerted effort to enact common sense gun safety legislation, she said in a press release marking the 1-year anniversary of the Aurora movie shooting. We must uphold our oath to protect and defend the Constitution and all Americans by expanding background checks and keeping dangerous freedoms out of the wrong
hands. Firearms out of the wrong
hands. What the hell is wrong with this freaking idiot woman?
Eric Pratt, Director of Communication for Gun Owners of America, called Pelosi's remarks breathtaking in an interview with CNS News. She actually stated she wants to uphold the Constitution by enacting additional background checks on gun purchases.
I wonder which country constitution she is referring to. He said, because ours clearly makes no allowances for gun control. And if Pelosi really wants to apply the lessons from Aurora, Colorado, in order to save lives, he said, she should work to repeal gun laws that discourage good people from carrying firearms.
But as CNS News pointed out, her oath does not include the phrase to protect and defend the Constitution. That phrase is found in the oath taken by the president, not members of Congress. The oath Pelosi took at the start of the 113th Congress, CNS said, reads, I do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I'll bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I would take this obligation freely, without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of office on which I am about to enter, so help me God. It's not the first time Pelosi has publicly exhibited apparent ignorance of the Constitution.
In February, for example, she declared the right to keep and bear arms exists in the First Amendment, not the Second. We avow the First Amendment, she said. She told Fox News, Chris Wallace. We stand with that and say that people have a right to have a gun to protect themselves and their homes and their jobs where and at
and that
they and the workplace and that they for recreation and recreation and hunting and the rest. So we're not questioning their right to do that. And Wallace did not correct Pelosi's gaffe. Okay, but she's a complete and utter idiot. And I am so sick of these people. So sick of these people,
Well, let's go to Cornell
West.
That'll even make you more sick.
There's one more before I go to Cornell. I wanted to, I'm trying to find it. Oh, this is very important here. Obama serves 14. Sorry, folks. Website, there it is. Okay. Obama serves 14 state governors with warning of arrest. And why is it that's not front page news?
Now, that's an interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Oh.
14 governors?
14 governors.
Probably not ours. He's in lockstep.
Ours is a gooseneck up the Obama butt kind of guy.
Yeah. We're from Connecticut.
This guy, our guy is just a...
Well, he's looking for federal office.
Complete schmo. Bootlicker. But we're gonna come to this because
before it's news is the site.
Yeah. And the interesting thing about this is he served. Now this is I'm gonna. Wait, here we go.
FEMA banned this video. That's interesting.
Yeah. Obama serves 14 state governors with warnings of arrest. And why is this not front page news? And this was published on May 7th. Now this is what 3 months ago.
Yeah. I never heard about it.
No, I didn't either. But this, I don't even know, this was published on this 2 months ago, but I just got it today. Barack Hussein Obama has served 14 state governors in the United States national security letters, warning that the governor's actions in attempting to form state defense forces needs to be halted immediately or they will face arrest for the crime of treason. The employment of NSLs, National Security Letters, was authorized by the Patriot Act introduced by George W. Bush. Contained within the section related to these letters, it is forbidden for anyone receiving a National Security Letter warning to even acknowledge the existence of the same communication.
Obama is angered by the several state governors who have reestablished state defense forces. These forces are described as state defense forces, also known as state guards, state military reserves, state militias. In the United States, are military units that operate under the sole authority of state government. They are not regulated by the National Guard Bureau, nor are they part of the Army National Guard of the United States. State defense forces are authorized by state and federal law and are under the command of the governor of each state. State defense forces are distinct from the state's National Guard in that they cannot become federal entities. Mr. Obama is fearful of these state defense forces in that he does not have control over said forces, and with the U.S. military stretched to new air breaking from multiple deployments and theater actions in Iraq and Afghanistan, these state military forces would be under the direct command and authority of the governors in which states have said forces. In essence, the governors would have de facto control of the United States.
The two governors leading the move are Tim Pawlenty, governor of Minnesota, and Rick Perry, governor of Texas. Both of these state governors stated that they have deep fear that president is destroying their nation. Governor Pawlenty's fear of Obama is that since Obama took office, he has appeased America's enemies and have shunned some of America's strongest allies. Most I disagree with him, especially Israel. Governor Perry has declared that Obama is punishing his state of Texas by dumping tens of thousands of illegal Mexican immigrants into the cities and small towns of Texas. Governor Perry further recently stated, if Barack Obama's Washington does not stop being so oppressive, Texans will feel compelled to renounce their American citizenry and secede from the Union. And Obama, fearing the revolution against him by the states, has moved swiftly by nationalizing nearly all National Guard forces in multiple states, Georgia, Alabama, Kansas, Minnesota, Tennessee, Virginia, Louisiana, and South Carolina, to name a few. The governors of the great states of Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Virginia still have under their command and control the state defense forces to go against U.S. federal forces should the need arise. Also, important to note, there are no U.S. laws prohibiting National Guard troops from also joining their state defense forces. This dilemma occurred during the Civil War when many citizen soldiers choosing to serve their states instead of the federal government. This is a fluid and still developing situation that warrants close attention. It's very interesting. It's never mentioned.
If we can get any news on it, we'll keep you posted.
Yeah. So, but you can check this article out at Alternate, I think. BeforeIt'sNews.com. And let's see, there's a couple more things I want to
We can come to those after we.
Listen
to Cornell West. I think it's important to see a segment of, listen to a segment of that.
Yeah, I'm going to play that. But I want to get to this one where it talks about where the. I know it's. The Supreme Court. I could have sworn I posted this, but the Supreme Court. Former President Jimmy Carter comes out in support of Edward Snowden.
Mm-hmm.
Pope criminalizes the reporting of sex crimes.
Oh, he's a big help, isn't he?
Pervos. But the one that I wanted to was where the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the immunity of all the pharmaceutical companies.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. No, I posted it separately. It was from It's also interesting to note that, maybe you didn't know this, folks, I mean, a lot of people didn't know this, but Eric Holder, back in 1970, was a gun-carrying radical at Columbia University in 1970. Never took a final exam until his junior year. Okay? Now, tell me this son of a bitch wasn't a chosen one.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, elected by the New World Order, you know, just like his dickhead friend, Obama.
Well, he's bought off. That's all.
He's an Obama boy. You know? Obama man. We're gonna, you know.
He's a made man.
Totally
in that criminal cartel.
Totally made man. And listen to this. I mean, he actually...
This is from the Daily Caller.
Yeah, here's a picture of the bastard with an afro and everything. You know? And, the 1970 group of armed black students seized the abandoned ROTC building in Columbia University. Come on. Okay.
As a college student, Eric Holder participated in the armed takeover of...
the Columbia University ROTC building. Come on. Yeah.
And then they sent him to law school.
Oh, he was in law school there.
Oh, was he?
He got his law degree. I mean,
from Columbia?
Yeah. And this guy was so, you know, can you imagine this guy being in an armed takeover protest at the ROTC in Columbia University and then becoming this, Attorney General of the United States?
Yeah, because for him and Obama, it's all about money. That's why.
Well, it's not just that. These guys were black guys. As a freshman at Columbia University in 1970, future Attorney General Eric Holder participated in a five-day occupation of an abandoned Naval Reserve Officer Training Corps headquarters with a group of black students, later described as the university's Black Students Organization, as armed, and as the Daily Caller has learned. Department of Justice spokeswoman Tracy Schmaller has not responded to questions from the Daily Caller about whether Holder himself was armed, and if so, with what sort of weapon. Holder was then among the leaders of the Student Afro-American Society, which demanded that the former ROTC office be renamed the Malcolm X Lounge. The change, the group insisted, was to be made in honor of the man who recognized the importance of territory as a basis for nationhood. Black radicals from the same group also occupied the office of the Dean of Freshmen, Henry Coleman, under their demands were met.
Until their demands.
Yeah, and Holder was publicly acknowledged being part of that action. The details of the student-led occupation, including the claim that the raiders were armed, come from a deleted webpage of the Black Student Organization at Columbia, a successor group to the SAAS. Contemporary newspaper accounts in the Columbia Daily Spectator, a student newspaper, did not mention weapons. Holder, now the United States' highest-ranking law enforcement official, has given conflicting accounts of this episode during college commencements addresses at Columbia, but both the BSO's website and the Daily Spectator have published facts that conflict with his version of events. Holder has bragged about his involvement in the Rise of Black Consciousness protest at Columbia. He said, "I am among a large group of students who felt strongly about the way we thought the world should be, and we weren't afraid to make our opinions heard," he said, during Columbia's 2009 commencement exercises. "I did not take a final exam until my junior year at Columbia. We were on strike every time finals seemed to roll around, but we ran out of issues by that third year."
Well, how do you get ahead if you don't take any exams?
And though then Dean Carl Hoad declared the occupation of the Naval ROTC offices illegal and said it violated university policy, the college declined to prosecute any of the students involved. This decision may have been made to avoid a repeat of violent Columbia campus confrontations between police and members of Students for a Democratic Society in 1968. The ROTC headquarters was ultimately renamed the Malcolm X Lounge, as the SAAS organization demanded. It later became a hangout spot for another future U.S. leader, Barack Obama, according to David Moranis, best-selling Barack Obama, the story. Holder told Columbia University's graduating law students during a 2010 commencement speech that the 1970 incident happened during my senior year, but Holder was a freshman at the time, and several of us took one of our concerns that black students needed a designated space to gather on campus to the dean of freshman offices. This being Columbia, we proceeded to occupy that office. Yeah.
Holder also claimed that in his 2009 speech that he and his fellow students decided to peacefully occupy one of the campus offices. In contrast, the BSO's websites recounted its predecessor organization's activities by noting that in the 1970, a group of armed black students, the SAAS, seized the abandoned ROTC office. While the website is no longer online, a snapshot of its contents from September 2010 is part of the archives.org database. In December 2010, GQ magazine profile of Holder, one of his Columbia friends, confirmed that he and Holder were part of the ROTC office takeover. Holder particularly connected with four other African-American students at Columbia. Correspondent Will S. Hilton wrote, "We took over the ROTC lounge in Hartley Hall and created the Malcolm X Lounge," said a laughing Steve Sims, one of those students. Hilton described Sims as the Attorney General's closest friend and a man Holder described as his consigliere.
Unbelievable. It really just gets you sick.
Uh-huh.
There's actually a couple more pages to this, but it's really unbelievable.
People can go to that. We'll keep them there.
Yeah. I think it's just...
This is from the Daily Caller.
It's interesting to know, see how this guy was connected to Obama about 40 years ago.
Yep.
And all these guys were radical ass wipes that were all involved. Folks, you don't believe in conspiracy? No. Just a little bit more of this. Yeah, he goes on. I'm gonna refer you to this Daily Caller and just go to that article. It's quite amazing, and it's quite long.
Amazing how these guys sanitize the history and rewrite it.
Yeah.
Interesting that he never took a final exam. He somehow just floats through. Doesn't have to pay for anything. Doesn't have to take any exams. Wouldn't you love to go through college never having to take an exam?
Yeah. I don't know if anybody likes Bloomberg or, cares about the guy, but I hate the man. Why does this AO keep getting elected? The New York mayoral election's rigged. Are New Yorkers as dumb as the Bostonians? He stops the people from taking escalators. He stops the escalators so people will walk upstairs because they're too fat. This guy is 1-6 on the beat. Bloomberg's latest nanny move, pushing people to take the stairs. First he came after the cigarettes, then his trans fats, then the supersized drinks. Now Mayor Bloomberg is coming after the elevators. City officials announced a new initiative this afternoon aimed at encouraging office workers to take the stairs instead of waiting for the elevator. Under legislation proposed by the mayor, all new buildings and buildings undergoing major renovation should be required to give occupants access to at least one stairwell, as well as post signs near elevators pointing to nearby stairs. Another bill would increase the visibility of stairwells by permitting the use of hold-open devices on doors that would close automatically in case of an emergency. Or whether you you're tall or short, fat or thin, you'll be healthier and you'll be live longer if you're more active, he says. But the problem is we've been lulled into a sedentary lifestyle. And a new school in too many buildings. The stairs are hard to find, kept locked, armed with alarms or devices.
That's true.
Many people are afraid to use them. As part of the effort, officials are announced the creation of the Center for Active Design, a nonprofit organization that will task with finding ways to design healthier buildings, promote public transit, and create more inviting outdoor spaces for activity.
I like that thought.
Well, Mr. Bloomberg also announced a new executive order. I love this executive order. Requiring all agencies to use these strategies when performing new construction or major renovations. And Mr. Bloomberg, who said he personally almost always uses the stairs and doesn't stand still when he's on an escalator, said that part of the challenge was to make being active hipper for young people across the city. And what we've got to do is just make it cool, if you will, or socially more the norm to exercise. And that's what you will see here, he says. The whole idea is not to change what you have to do, but to give you the idea and impetus to do something that is in your best interest. Yeah. Somebody asked me the other day, well, isn't all this nanny stuff hurtful of hurting business? And I pointed out, we had a record number of companies moving here. We had record number of private sector jobs here. And we have record number of tourists. So stop me when you get bored, he added. I mean, these are things that most people like.
I have to say I don't disagree with him on that. You never can... When I
want to
use...
Well, I disagree with him.
Well, let me just finish. When I want to use the stairs, I can never find them. Or they're pushed to one side and they're not safe because there's no light or if you open the door, you can't. The door is locked. You don't know where the stairs are going. I think people should be encouraged to use the stairs rather than ride on elevators and escalators. And I think they should be safe, and I think they should be a good alternative.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
Oh, okay, Lila. You can be the nanny babe of Bloomberg.
I'm not telling...
Bloomberg's
no,
nanny.
I'm not telling other people to take the stairs. If I want to take the stairs, I should be able to.
Well, go right ahead.
You can't find them.
They're all over the place.
They're locked. Nah. And they're usually unsafe because nobody else is on a way over on one side of the building. I like stairs when they're open.
All right. So no one's stopping you from using the stairs. But if this Virginia gubernatorial candidate campaign gets off the ground, he has an effort to restore a ban on oral sex. Imagine that. In an unusual move, Virginia Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, Republican, of course, his party nominee for governor, launched a new campaign website Wednesday highlighting his efforts to reinstate Virginia's unconstitutional crimes against nature law, the rule that makes felons out of even consenting married couples who engage in oral or anal sex in the privacy of their own homes, was struck down by federal courts after Cuccinelli blocked efforts to bring it in line with the Supreme Court's 2003 decision of Lawrence versus Texas ruling.
Oh, you don't need to read anymore.
I think the guy's a fucking nut.
Can we go to Cornell West? I think we only have about 10 minutes. I'd like to have that. I think it's important that people hear.
All right, all right. But my God, Lila, don't be such a prude.
This is an international. So we heard it. Okay. All right, let's go to Cornell West.
The
Bill to
preserve child protection statutes. This amounts to a little more than an attempt to restore the state constitutional ban on oral sex. The guy is crazy.
We have less than 10 minutes.
All right, Lila, don't pressure the issue here.
Well, I am because I wanted people to hear it.
It's not all that exciting.
But I want them to understand that there are prominent black people that are against Obama
right,
for the same reasons that a lot of other people are. Prominent, respected black people.
Oh.
And their voices are being hushed.
It's debatable how respected Cornell West is, but, you know, it's still... Here's somewhere. Oh, by the way, It was the CIA that helped jail Nelson Mandela, for anybody who likes to know. Obamacare pay for sex changes with your hard-earned money, but Obamacare doesn't cover most dental work, hearing aids, or vision issues.
Mm-hmm.
They'll pay for sex change operations. Huh. Okay. Come on. Where's the... What do you think of that one?
Oh, my God.
Is that good?
Yeah. Oh, they have a picture of Kate and Will with a baby... Charles, oh my God.
Isn't it disgusting? Yeah. There was another one with a little ripped up. Didn't post that one, though. Okay. Oh, interesting article about NSA. They're refusing Freedom of Information
request
on your own files. All right, this is the one Lila wants to hear. Miss Cornel West's response to Trayvon Martin case relies failure to challenge new Jim Crow by Democracy Now. A little bit of that. Can you hear what he says?
Verdict in the mass protests around the country, we turn right now to Dr. Cornel West, professor at Union Theological Seminary, author of numerous books, co-host of the radio show Smiley and West with Tavis Smiley. Together, they wrote the book The Rich and the Rest of Us, a Poverty Manifesto, among Cornel West's other books. Professor Cornel West, President Obama surprised not only the press room at the White House, but the nation, I think, on Friday in his first public remarks following the George Zimmerman acquittal. What are your thoughts?
Well, first thing, I think we have to acknowledge that President Obama has very little moral authority at this point, because we know anybody who tries to rationalize the killing of innocent people is a criminal. George Zimmerman is a criminal. But President Obama is a global George Zimmerman because he tries to rationalize the killing of innocent children, 221 so far, in the name of self-defense. So that there's actually parallels here in Pakistan, Somalia, Yemen. So when he comes to talk about the killing of an innocent person, you say, well, wait a minute, what kind of moral authority are you bringing? You've got $2 million bounty on Sister Sada Shakur. She's innocent, but you are pressing that intensely. Will you press for the justice of Trayvon Martin in the same way you press for the prosecution of Brother Bradley Manning and Brother Edward Snowden? So you begin to see the hypocrisy. Then he tells stories about racial profiling. They're moving sentimental stories, what Brother Kendall Thomas called racial moralism, very sentimental. But then Ray Kelly, major candidate for Department of Homeland Security, he's the poster child of racial profiling. You know, Brother Carl Dixon and any others went to jail under Ray Kelly. Why? Because he racially profiled millions of young black and brown brothers. So on the one hand, you get these stories.
Ray Kelly, the former police chief of New York City.
That's right. And yet you get these bringing into his circle.
The current one.
And in fact, he even says Ray Kelly expresses his values. Ray Kelly is a magnificent police commissioner. How are you going to say that when the brothers reinforce and stop and frisk? So the contradictions become so overwhelming here.
But President Obama, speaking about his own life experience, going from saying Trayvon Martin could have been my child to Trayvon Martin could have been me.
Well, no, that's beautiful. That's an identification. The question is, will that identification hide and conceal the fact there's a criminal justice system in place that has nearly destroyed two generations of very precious, poor, black and brown brothers? He hasn't said a mumbling word until now, 5 years in office, and can't say a word about a new Jim Crow. And at the same time, I think we have to recognize that he has been able to hide and conceal that criminalizing of the black poor as what I call the re-niggerizing of the black professional class. You've got these black leaders on the Obama plantation, won't say a criminal word about the master in the big house, will only try to tame the field folk so that they're not critical of the master in the big house. That's why I think even Brother Sharpton is going to be in trouble. Why? Because he has unleashed, and I agree with him, the rage, and the rage is always on the road to self-determination, but the rage is going to hit up against a stone wall. Why? Because Obama and Holder, will they come through at the federal level for Trayvon Martin? We hope so. Don't hold your breath. And when they don't, they're going to have to somehow contain that rage. And in containing that rage, there's going to be many people say, no, we see, this president is not serious about decriminalizing of poor people. We've got a black leadership that is deferential to Obama, that is subservient to Obama, and that's what niggerizing is. You keep folks so scared, you keep folks so intimidated. You can give money, assets, but they're still scared, and as long as you're scared, you're on the plantation.
Let's talk about that issue of the civil rights charges. During his remarks on Friday in the White House press room, President Obama addressed the calls for the Justice Department to file civil rights charges against George Zimmerman.
I know that Eric Holder is reviewing what happened down there, but I think it's important for people to have some clear expectations here. Traditionally, these are issues of state and local government, the criminal code. And law enforcement is traditionally done at the state and local levels, not at the federal levels.
That's President Obama.
That's not true. That was him saying, keep your expectations low, Sharpton, don't get them too fired up, keep the rage contained. We know when it comes to history of the vicious legacy of white supremacy in America, if the federal government did not move, we would still be locked in the states' rights. And states' rights is always a code word for controlling, subjugating black folk. That's the history of the black struggle, you see. So what he was saying was, don't expect federal action. Well, Sharpton's going to be in trouble. Mark Murillo, two brothers, they're going to be in trouble.
Urban League.
Urban League, absolutely. Ben Jealous, God bless the brother, he's going to be in trouble. He's getting folk riled up to hit up against his stone wall. The next thing they'll be talking about, well, maybe we ought to shift to gun control. No, we're talking about the legacy of the white supremacy. We're talking about a criminal justice system that is criminal when it comes to mistreating poor people across the board, black and brown especially. And let us tell the truth and get off this Obama plantation and say, you know what? We're dealing with criminality in high places, criminality in these low places, and let's expose the hypocrisy, expose the mendacity, and be true to the legacy of Martin. You know there's going to be a march in August, right? And the irony is, the sad irony
is, the march of the honoring the 50th anniversary.
You know what the irony is?
I have a dream speak.
Brother Martin would not be invited to the very march in his name, because he would talk about drones, he'd talk about Wall Street criminality, he would talk about working class being pushed to the margins as profits went up for corporate executives and their compensation, he would talk about the legacies of white supremacy. Do you think anybody at that march would talk about drones and the drone president? Would you think anybody at that march would talk about the connection to Wall Street? They all on the plantation.
Are you invited?
Can you imagine? Good God, no. I mean, I pray for him because I'm for liberal reform. But liberal reform is too narrow, too truncated. And, of course, the two-party system is dying, and therefore it doesn't have the capacity to speak to these kinds of issues. So, no, not at all.
So you're saying that President Obama should not only say, I could have been Trayvon Martin, but I could have been, for example, Abdulrahman Alaki, the 16-year-old son of Anwar Alaki, who was killed in a drone strike.
Or the nameless 221 other precious children who are as precious as the white brothers and sisters in Newtown that he cried tears for. Those in Indian reservations, those in Chinatown, Koreatown, those in brown barrios, each child's precious. That is a moral absolute, it seems to me, we ought to embrace. And if that's true, then we've got monstrous mendacity, hyper-hypocrisy, and pervasive criminality in high places. That's why Brother Snowden and Brother Manning are the John Browns of our day, and the Glenn Greenwalds and the Chris Hedges and Glenn Fords and Bruce Dixons and Margaret Kimberleys and Nellie Baileys, all the William Lloyd Garrisons of our day when we talk about the national security state.
Clearly, the power of the personal representative representation is what grabbed people on Friday. You also had Attorney General Eric Holder doing the same thing when he was speaking at the NAACP convention on Tuesday. Holder drew parallels between his own experiences as an African-American male and those of Trayvon Martin when he recalled times in his life when he was racially profiled.
The news of Trayvon Martin's death last year and the discussions that have taken place since then reminded me of my father's words so many years ago. And they brought me back to a number of experiences that I had as a young man when I was pulled over twice and my car searched on the New Jersey Turnpike when I'm sure I wasn't speeding, or when I was stopped by a police officer while simply running to catch a movie at night in Georgetown in Washington, D.C. I was, at the time of that last incident, a federal prosecutor.
So basically that's it. If you want to go to you want to go to democracynow.org, you can check that video out.
Yeah.
And
listen to what Cornel West has to say.
Yeah, it was a very, very good article, a very good
interview. Yeah. Well, he's very outspoken and
and
doesn't mince any words.
But he said it like it was, and Obama's a hypocrite, and Obama's and you know, Cornel West
and
is
a fellow.
Yeah, Cornel West is a black man, and that's the way it is. Don't think for one second, folks, that black people do not understand and do not, respect what's happening here. You know, that they understand that Obama doesn't really care for them, doesn't really care about.
He doesn't like poor people.
He doesn't, and he's a
or middle class people either.
He's a corporate fascist, and that's what he is. And
if he can take your 5 cents or your 2 cents, he'll take it.
Yeah, and the same with Eric Holder. He's no better than Obama. Yeah.
They sold out when they were students.
Yeah, so that's the way.
It's the lure of money, because that's what they wanted.
Yeah. And power.
They weren't interested in justice. They were interested in money and power.
That was it, and that's what they got. So, at that point, folks, you tell me in 1970, all right, 71 or 72, all right, how these guys knew that they were going to be where
they
are.
Well, they were put on the track.
They were put on the fast track and said, and then all of their... He never got an exam. This guy didn't even take an exam until his junior year.
Amazing.
So, it tells you, these guys were all made men. They were all created and all prepared and all prepped because, that's what they were. They're frauds. They're all frauds. All right?
Just like some white people are the same way.
Not color. There's no color barrier here.
No.
These guys are just frauds. So, based on that alone, for that information, go to that article, go to that information on July 22nd, democracynow.org, and check it out.
And thanks for being with us, folks. Stay tuned tomorrow night, and we'll have some union news for you. We'll have Larry Dorman, who's the public affairs coordinator for AFSCME, will be on our show.
So
I hope you enjoy the rest of the evening. Good night, folks.
Good night, everyone.